We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
They call you the Grill Master. You've seared the thickest porterhouse in the butcher shop. And as you lift that first forkful to your mouth, you savor the moment. To get amazing offers during the Mercedes-Benz summer event, like the 2019 C-Class sedan and GLC SUV, the perfect recipes of driving performance. Plus, you can enjoy 6 months of Sirius XM All Access included. The Mercedes-Benz summer event, now serving limited time offers on a select lineup of vehicles. Offers end September 3rd. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the September 24th, 2018 edition of the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show covering the serious and mocking the ridiculous NFL news of the last week, brought to you by SquadQL. I'm Blair Andrews. You can follow me on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair, and my co-host is Hassan Rahim, who you can follow at HRR5010. Hassan, what's up?
Hey, it's, getting to real football season. It's finally a little bit cooler than it has been over the last few weeks, so that's pretty nice. The leaves are starting to turn slowly. How about yourself, Blair?
Yeah, can't complain. Kind of a mixed week in fantasy for me. Some teams are doing well and some are doing really very bad, but like you said, the weather's starting to turn. It's a fun time to be a football fan. I'm really excited to get into the news today with our guest. Joining us today on the show is Greg Smith. Greg is the co-founder of 2QBs.com. He's the creator of Gameflobotics and a consultant for Draft Day Consultants. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Sauce. Greg, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
Yeah, things are good. Kind of like you said, I feel like I could gripe about a lot of things. You know, it's a mixed bag every week when we play in as many leagues as we do. So you can always find something to complain about, even if it's just like the green zone on NBC as we watch Sunday Night Football. But happy to be here. I'm super excited to get into this stuff with you guys.
Absolutely. Let's jump right in. The first big news item, Jimmy Garoppolo was carted to the locker room with a knee injury late in the fourth quarter, week three against the Chiefs. He finished the day with 251 yards and two scores. Kyle Shanahan says the team fears Garoppolo has torn his ACL. So, Greg, this is obviously a huge blow for the 49ers offense. And, you know, of course, we wish Garoppolo the best in a speedy recovery. Hope he gets back to full health. What do you think that his absence does to the 49ers offense and specifically to the receivers?
I mean, can we first talk about CJ Beathard and how he might be able to help some fantasy owners in 2QB leagues? Like, I wouldn't be repping my brand if we didn't, my hashtag brand. for those of us or those of you listening who drafted Tyrod Taylor or Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota or any of those other disappointing quarterbacks that are out there, Beathard does present kind of an interesting opportunity. He's not a great passer, but he's a very good runner. Last season, he posted 5.23 yards per carry, averaged 22.7 yards per game on the ground. Those numbers put him in the Konami code conversation with known running threats like Mariota, like Tyrod, like Dak Prescott, like Alex Smith. So I think that he's going to be a nice waiver wire add there. So now that you've let me get that out of the way, I'll answer your actual question. I think Marquise Goodwin takes the most significant value hit. If you look at your guys' RotoViz game splits app, the numbers for Goodwin are not good when Beathard is in there. He averaged about two fewer targets per game when Beathard played last year. And looking at the other small sample size splits for other Niners receivers with Beathard, it doesn't get much better. Like, Garcon looks worse. The tight ends look worse. And it makes sense. Like, Beathard isn't a good quarterback if you look at his yards per attempt, his adjusted yards per attempt, adjusted net yards per attempt, like whatever efficiency metric you want to use. Beathard was terrible. He's just not a very good passer. So him going under center is a bad thing for all his wide receivers. I think the tight ends might be a little bit more of a value neutral move, if only because tight ends tend to run shorter routes. They tend to draw easier coverage from defenses than wide receivers do. I think Matt Breida is probably the only guy who could be a big beneficiary here. But again, that kind of assumes that he can hold up for the entire season. And he got dinged up for a period of time in today's game. So if that continues to happen, like, who knows before how long it'll be before he just gets a real injury and misses a bunch of time. Like, I think a lot of people have expressed that concern with Breida. Where are you guys at on this? Because I in general, think this is just terrible for the Niners all over the place.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this is just, we're going back to C.J. Beathard. We know he heavily targets his running backs. So we saw that when, I mean, he fed Carlos Hyde the rock just on checkdowns because he's got this horrible pocket awareness. And the second they moved over to Jimmy Garoppolo, you're seeing kind of the vision that Kyle Shanahan had of this offense going forward. You had those deep shots to Goodwin. Maybe Pierre Garçon and his, shallow depth of target meshes kind of okay with what Beathard does. But at the end of the day, this is, as you mentioned, just a net neutral, just a supreme downgrade for this entire offense. They're not going to be able to sustain drives. They're not going to be able to rack up the first downs. And it's going to look a lot more like what they did last year. This is a very talent deficient receiver core. You know, Garçon, Goodwin, Kittle, these guys are guys that really require someone like Garoppolo under center to bring out their true fantasy value, whereas someone like Beathard might not even be able to support any one of those guys. Where are you at with that, Blair?
Yeah, I mean, I would think it's a downgrade for almost everyone. The only person I would maybe think could kind of sustain value would be Breida for all the reasons you mentioned. You know, on the other hand, I mean, Garoppolo hasn't really looked that good this year. You know, so for Beathard, he's probably a downgrade, but is he that much of a downgrade from 2018 Garoppolo? Maybe not. So, you know, I don't expect the offense to be as good under Beathard. Of course, I expected them to be a lot better with Garoppolo, so... it might not be a huge difference from what we've seen already. You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking. And like what you said, Greg, about Beathard being a good candidate if you need QB help, I think that's a really great point. I could really use him in Scott Fishbowl right now. Of course, I think I already spent all my fab, so probably won't get him.
Yeah, I think the other big concern here is that the Niners defense is really bad. It's just, they're not going to set up good game scripts for Beathard. He's going to be put into predictable situations. Like, the defenses are going to know when he has to throw. And as a player who's not a good passer, that's not good. With Garoppolo, you're right. He hadn't been great this season, but at the same time, he's competent enough to, even when the opposing team knows he's going to throw, can still succeed in spite of that. Whereas I'm not sure Beathard can do that.
Good point.
Evan Engram suffered a knee injury in Week 3 against the Texans. Engram had one catch for 19 yards before leaving and caught all seven of his Week 2 targets for 67 yards and a touchdown. Greg, Ingram is the latest victim in a season that's already seen multiple highly drafted TEs lost to injury. What does this injury mean for the Giants' offense, and who do you expect? Where do you expect his targets will end up going if he has to miss extended time?
I think today's game showed us where the targets are going to go. We're going to see more work heaped on Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, and Saquon Barkley, and I think the primary beneficiary is Shepard, but it's not like Cody Latimer and Rhett Ellison are going to do anything besides pick up maybe some occasional opportunistic targets. Because if the Giants are trying to feature Latimer or Ellison in the offense, they're doing it wrong. Pat Shurmur should know better. He should know who butters his bread in this offense. And I think, you know, a more predictable target distribution in the offense would seem helpful to fantasy owners. Like, it would be good if we knew that, you know, more targets were going to Beckham and Shepard. But I think that makes it tougher on Eli Manning, you know, on the whole, just kind of like what we were just talking about with Beathard. You know, it's like if the defense knows what the offense wants to do, that's not good. Like, you want to be able to keep the defense on their toes. And if there are fewer weapons for Eli Manning to engage, like, that's a problem. I ultimately, though, I don't think Ingram's injury drastically shifts the outlook of this offense, because they probably didn't have enough targets to go around for all the receivers they had in the first place. And you just look at weeks 1 and 2, when Shepard and Ingram were already kind of scrapping and fighting each other for targets. I think in one of the weeks, one of them had 5 targets, the other had 7. And then in the following week, it flipped. Like, the other guy got 7 and the first one got 5. So now we should see more steady target, you know, volume for Shepard, which is a good thing. But if the defense knows those targets are coming, maybe that's not good on the whole. So, like, more volume, less efficiency. I think that's kind of what you can come to expect. But with Shepard, who was already a guy who you really only wanted for volume in the first place, you know, now he has more TD upside. I think that this is a pretty big boost for him if Ingram misses any amount of significant time.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Shepard was already, like you said, kind of getting squeezed out just because of how many, you know, so few targets they had. I mean, the game today was a little weird with Manning completing 25 of 29 passes. You know, I think he'll probably end up having to throw more than that and not be so efficient. So there will probably be, you know, more targets to go around than we saw today. But yeah, like you said, I think if Ingram does miss time, you'll probably see this, you know, the target share kind of a lot more concentrated between Beckham and Shepard and Barkley, which, you know, in a way could be helpful. If you can predict where those targets are going, you can, you know, have more confidence in those guys. So yeah, pretty much exactly what you said, I agree with.
Yeah, I mean, with Barkley, the guy is just getting peppered with targets. Last week he led the team in terms of raw target opportunity, and even today he saw a pretty healthy chunk of targets. And if we're seeing Eli Manning just be that check down Charlie and he's found that safety blanket in Barkley, he's definitely going to live up to that lofty first round ADP that he had all summer. And if you have him in a PPR league, you should be very, very happy about the production you're getting from Barkley.
Another potential bonus for Barkley here is that Ingram wasn't really known as a good blocker. And if the Giants have to run out more traditional tight ends, that could help him in the running game, I think. I'll be interested to see how that plays out over the next few weeks.
Do you think that the Giants might try to run more with Ingram out? If they have, like, a competent blocker on the field more often, they might shift more toward the run?
I think that makes sense. Whether or not they do it is another question. You know, I'm not a play caller. I don't know how these guys think necessarily. I'd like to think I did, but, you know, if I really could parse that stuff out week to week, I think I'd be better at fantasy football.
All right. Before we get into No Shit Shit No, I want to take a quick moment to remind you that you can support the RotoViz Radio Network and our 10 shows per week on Patreon. By doing so, you'll gain exclusive access to RotoViz Live, our weekly Sunday morning video show answering all your fantasy questions. Patronships start at just $6 a month and provide exclusive access to RotoViz Live. That's 4 shows per month on top of 40 podcasts for just $6. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today to join an exclusive community of listeners, access premium content, and do your part in helping the network to grow and continue to produce high-quality, industry-leading programming.
Yeah, and speaking of those exclusives, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get a 30% off your RotoViz NFL Pass right now. It's available through the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Gain unlimited access to all of our NFL content and tools. You get amazing value. You help support the pod. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast.
Hey, sports fans, football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event. Even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
All right, now let's get into no shit, shit no. First item up. Blake Bortles went 20 of 33 passing for 158 yards and rushed 5 times for 27 yards in the Jaguars' Week 3 loss to the Titans.
No shit. Blake Bortles isn't good. Apologies to Jason Mendoza.
Deshaun Watson completed 24 of 40 passes for 385 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception in the Texans' Week 3 loss to the Giants.
No shit. He's not a particularly accurate passer, but he makes up for what Watson does with a high volume of downfield throws. That's, you know, a recipe for high yardage totals on bad completion percentage, and having DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller to throw to certainly helps.
Christian McCaffrey rushed 28 times for 184 yards and caught 2 of 2 targets for 10 yards in the Panthers' Week 3 win over the Bengals.
No shit. McCaffrey is good. Norv Turner likes to feature his running back. I think this might have been a little surprising to some people because Cincinnati had DVOA's 7th best defense against the run through 2 weeks. But I think those stats were built on facing, you know, rushing averse Indy and a Baltimore team that was kind of game scripted into abandoning the run a couple weeks ago. And meanwhile, Carolina is built to run. Like, that's when you have Cam Newton, it makes sense to involve the running back in a heavy way. And they played to that strength today. I think it made a lot of sense that McCaffrey was featured and had a big game.
Should we kind of expect to see his target totals like fluctuate this much, like 16 one week to the next week, or do you think we'll see more consistent passing game work from him going forward?
Yeah, actually, that was surprising to me. I thought that he was going to get a ton of targets today, given the matchup. But I would expect more steady production in that way, more consistent targets. Only 2 was strange. I don't know why that happened necessarily, but I didn't get a chance to watch that game yet, so I don't know exactly. Maybe they were, you know, maybe the Bengals were actually scheming to take him out of the passing game and forcing, you know, Funchess and whoever else to beat them. I'm not sure. Did you guys see that game by chance?
I have not had a chance, unfortunately. Or did you?
No, I didn't. But yeah, I was expecting a lot more passes to McCaffrey. I know, you know, the Bengals get beat a lot by pass catching running backs and tight ends in the middle of the field. So it was really weird to see him not get those targets. So yeah, I can only assume something was going on with the Bengals D. I don't know. No idea.
Yeah, the Bengals had allowed the 2nd most adjusted targets per game to running backs entering week 2, I think with 13.0. And McCaffrey had been leading the NFL in running back targets. So it's very strange that he only saw 2 there. That was something was probably up. That's weird.
Josh Allen completed 15 of 22 passes for 196 yards and 1 touchdown, adding 10 carries for 39 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground in the Bills' week 3 victory over the Vikings.
Shit no on the passing production, but no shit on the rushing production. Allen is a really good athlete, and Brian Daboll's offense is going to play to Allen's strength as a rusher. If you want to read more about that, I'm going to throw in a plug here, more about Allen as a designed runner in the Bills scheme. I recommend reading Derek Klassen's Finding the Fit article for Josh Allen that we posted at 2QBs.com on July 25th. And while you're at it, you might as well check out Chris Allen's article on Allen as well from the day before. So Chris Allen's article on Josh Allen on July 24th at 2QBs.com. But yeah, the rushing production is legit. They're going to keep using him like that, I think. And that's going to give him some sneaky value in fantasy.
And what do you think about the Bills' Week 3 victory over the Vikings?
Oh, man. I mean, out of nowhere, for sure. I don't think anybody saw that coming, right? I mean, did you guys have any idea? Like, I can understand if you thought that the Bills were going to cover the, 17-point spread or whatever it was. But in terms of expecting them to win outright, like, the Vikings just fell asleep. There's no excuse for losing to this team.
Yeah, I read somewhere, I think it was like the biggest upset in the NFL in 23 years or something.
Sounds
crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I picked the Vikings in both my eliminator pools. I meant to go in and change it to the Jaguars, and I didn't. And it didn't matter because I would have been eliminated in either case.
TJ Yeldon rushed 7 times for 44 yards and caught 6 of 7 targets for 46 yards in the Jaguars' Week 3 loss to Tennessee.
No shit. Yeldon isn't really an elite talent. I think we knew he was a little dinged up entering this week if you watched the practice reports and the reports this morning. So I think fading a big workload was the right call. And it makes sense that he was used more as a receiver because, those targets are a little easier to scheme and going to keep him healthy in that way. But I think this is kind of what we can expect from him. And it sounds like Fournette will be back eventually. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I know Corey Grant started this game, and I was really hoping to see a lot more from him. Were you surprised they kind of went back to Yeldon, or was that expected?
I mean, considering the way Grant played, I think he only caught 1 pass for negative yardage. He only rushed the ball 6 times, like for less than 2 yards per carry. Like, he didn't look good, so it makes sense that they went back to Yeldon. I actually started Grant in Scott Fishbowl, and so that might end up coming back to bite me. Because as I was with you, I wanted him to get some more work. I think he's a good player, and Yeldon's a fine player. I just don't think he's a great one. I don't know. It's those divisional games are always a little wonky, especially when you have such a like Jekyll and Hyde player like Blake Bortles under center. I don't really want to have any part of that backfield going forward, just because it seems like it's going to be a mess. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually sat Carlos Hyde in a league because I was like, hey, Leonard Fournette's going to be just fine, and he's a late scratch. So I started Philip Lindsay, who got himself ejected for throwing a punch. So it's been a great, great day, as you can tell. But yeah, this is going to be a very, very convoluted backfield going forward, especially if they're trying to manage Fournette's hammy.
Well, yeah, on top of the fact that you read this stuff about how, or I mean, you see it on the field, I guess, with the Jags playing so much different when Fournette isn't available to them. Like, they spread it out a little bit more. They put a little bit more up tempo. And I don't know if this matchup against Tennessee just wasn't conducive to that, but it was surprising to see them find so much success with that type of play last week and fall so flat on their face today against Tennessee. Like, I just don't get it. They're just such a, and I think it all just comes down to Bortles. Like, I just don't think he's good. And, when he gets lucky, it's going to work out for some of those players on his team. But the rest of the time, it's going to be maddening. And I just don't want to deal with that shit.
Hey, that's what best ball is for, right?
Yep, exactly.
Latavius Murray rushed 2 times for 1 yard and added 5 catches for 30 receiving yards in the Vikings' Week 3 loss to the Bills.
Shit, no, I did not see this coming. We've kind of touched on this before. I expected Murray to get so much work that the Vikings would eventually have to ease up and start handing off to like Michael Boone and Rock Thomas and CJ Ham. Like, I thought this game was going to get out of hand, and it did, just in the complete opposite direction. This was flabbergasting. I don't really know what else to say about it.
Yeah, I actually, on the forums and in an article I published this morning, I actually recommended fading Murray on DraftKings, but it was because I thought he would end up getting like 15 carries and 2 targets or something and not actually be that good of a DraftKings play where it's full PPR. So this was surprising to me, for a totally different reason that he's getting these 5 catches. I think he had, 7 targets or something, so... It
a lot of
out,
those
but for the wrong reason.
Yeah, a lot of those cheap running back plays this week didn't really work out. Like Yeldon, Corey Clement, Latavius Murray. Like, it was a much better week seemingly to be back on the high price guys, and maybe like Travis Kelce, although or not Travis Kelce, excuse me, Kareem Hunt. Aiming for that touchdown regression. But yeah, it was wonky, man. The chalk did not get there.
Yeah, it was quite a surprise. Like you, I was expecting like Rock Thomas and Mike Boone and Kyle Slaughter, just guys who we played in preseason DFS. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, it's like old times. Nope.
Patrick Mahomes completed 24 of 38 passes for 314 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Chiefs' Week 3 win over the 49ers.
No shit. He's a top 5 quarterback in this offense, maybe top 3, top 2, especially against bad defenses like the Niners. I don't know what else he has to do to prove it. Like I had John Proctor on the 2 QB Experience podcast earlier this week, and I asked him, is like, if you got offered, you know, in magical Christmas land, a straight up trade of any quarterback for Pat Mahomes, which one would you say yes for? And I was expecting him to throw out, like, you know, the 3 big names that you expect to hear, you know, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. But he said none. He's like, I don't want any of those guys. And I was like, well, I'm not sure, like maybe. And he was right. Like, there's really no reason to think that Patrick Mahomes can't keep this up. Like, his weapons are amazing. He's super talented. And God, does he look good, and does he look older than what he than his actual age? It's crazy. Like, some of the plays he made, like that one where he did like that serpentine evasion of the Niners pass rush and then threw that sidearm pass, like that was incredible. Like, I don't know how you definitely can't teach that type of instinct, and that sort of stuff makes him super exciting. Like, I know this is, I'm just waxing poetic here about Patrick Mahomes, but he is awesome, dude. I don't think there's any reason to doubt him going forward.
Yeah, I really want Mahomes to stay healthy, kind of because Watson was like Mahomes before Mahomes. It's just, I'm with you. Like, he ran back like what 30 yards before he was credited with that 5-yard touchdown strike to Chris Conley. Yeah. Like, that's a 5-yard touchdown strike, but really he just he flung that ball and he threaded the needle. He created those windows. And the one thing that's like wild is how young he is. You know, like, people, part of the reason why Mayfield ended up transferring from Texas Tech was because Cliff Kingsbury ended up recruiting Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes put up these gaudy totals in the offense for 2 years, with his best receiver was Kiki QT. And then he left for the pros, right? And when he left for the pros, when you're looking at the regression that offense underwent, it went from like an offense that put up just video game numbers, like 6,000 yards a season, to like 3,000 yards. That's where you know it's still a very potent offense with a good quarterback that just is not NFL caliber. But Mahomes has got, you know, like you said, like, man, this kid just, I hope he stays healthy. I own him in exactly one league, and it's a one quarterback league, and no one is getting him. Unless you can offer me Odell Beckham Jr., you're just not getting Mahomes. I'm going to own this kid. No, I want to enjoy this moment.
If it's dynasty, I could kind of see it, but yeah, I don't know, man. And it's, okay, there you go. I was going to say, if it's redraft and someone's offering you running backs or wide receivers of high tier, I think you still flip Mahomes because quarterback is so easy to replace, especially one QB. But yeah, in dynasty, maybe that's a different story.
As some of it's just me here, just because it's like a really just a fun dime right now. If someone really is going to offer me Odell, I would definitely say yes. I just can't see myself trading him for another quarterback.
Are there any matchups for Mahomes on the schedule going forward that you guys are worried about? Like, he's at Denver in week 4, and then he gets Jacksonville at home. Like, those are, like, Denver's definitely not the defense they used to be, but Jacksonville could be pretty imposing. Like, is there any way you would even consider benching Mahomes for that matchup at this point?
It would depend, I guess, who else I had, of course.
I'm not going to bench him against Denver, I don't think. I mean, we saw Derek Carr have a very efficient game against Denver last week in Denver. So I don't see why I should be worried about Mahomes. Home versus the Jaguars, I can absolutely see myself just sort of benching him. And then part of me like worries that like this is going to be where he just takes a flamethrower to that offense. You remember last year when Jimmy Garoppolo did that to this team? And I'm just worried that they're going to be overexposed on the blitz, and it's just going to be this 80-yard TD strike after 80-yard TD strike to like the fullback Anthony Sherman, because apparently everyone on that team catches touchdowns.
Except Kareem Hunt.
But I mean, you look at his schedule going forward, and yeah, Jacksonville looks a little scary in week 5, and then the worst matchups after that are probably Los Angeles, the Rams in LA in week 11. And after that, it's what, maybe at Cleveland? Is Cleveland a defense we're afraid of? Like, they're better this year, but no, like, I don't know. I don't really see any time where, like, especially like in two quarterback formats, like Mahomes is a locked in QB1 every week for me at this point. I'm not scared away by Jacksonville. I'm not scared away by the Rams. I think the team around him is so good. The way that they scheme to him and to his strengths is also so good that there's really no reason to fade him. And I mean, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see if he does come back to earth, because the defenses he's faced so far have been bad. Like Los Angeles Chargers, like their defense has been crap. Pittsburgh's defense has been terrible. The San Francisco 49ers have a bad defense. So the next like 2 to 4 weeks, Denver, Jacksonville, Cincinnati in week 7, their defense is okay. Like, I think we might get a better idea of exactly how good he is, but I still think the answer might be like top 5 good, top 3 good. And yeah. I can't wait to see how it plays out.
So like New England is playing the Colts in week 5. Would you bench Mahomes for Tom Brady?
I probably would.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of like, I mean, you're definitely not going to want to play Alex Smith or when, you know, when they come back off their bye or whatever. I think that's the kind of caliber you need, which in a 1QB league and a super flex league, if you somehow, I mean, I guess in a 1QB league, if you have Mahomes and Brady, you might want to do that flipping thing that Greg mentioned. You might want to trade one of them off, trade one of them out for whatever you can get. But, you know, in super flex, you're just going to have to keep plugging him in. It's wild how when the season started, everyone was like, well, he's going to be face a very difficult schedule to start. And he's just sort of shredded Los Angeles in Los Angeles. And even when you're looking at ahead to the playoffs, do any of these teams scare you? The Ravens and the Chargers at Kansas City, or him going to Seattle?
Yeah, to open the year, the Chargers defense just hasn't been as good as it was advertised to be. Same with Pittsburgh. So getting the Chargers again in week 15, maybe they're a little healthier then. Like if Joey Bosa's in, like maybe that's a scarier matchup at the time. But I don't know, like especially because that one's in Kansas City. I'm not worried about that. The Baltimore matchup, I mean, I think they looked like a good defense when they played Buffalo. And then, you know, Cincinnati tore them to shreds. You know, their slot corner is a problem. We found out that again today. That was one of my worst calls of the week, was saying that Emmanuel Sanders was going to be bad against the Ravens because, you know, they only have, you know, the two receivers there really with him and Demaryius Thomas. But, you know, when you put Emmanuel Sanders in the slot, it's not quite the same type of matchup, and that's exploitable. And I mean, whether it's Sammy Watkins there, whether it's Tyreek Hill operating out of the slot, whether it's Travis Kelce operating on those types of routes, like, Mahomes is going to have options there against Baltimore. And I don't know, I'm not worried about the schedule. Like I said, I think the worst ones on the schedule for him are Jacksonville week 5, at the Rams in week 11. And otherwise, I'm probably just mindlessly putting him into my lineup and just saying YOLO every time.
Yeah.
What is the price that he needs to get up to on DraftKings or FanDuel where you're just going to fade him eventually? I mean, did he hit value at 8,900 in FanDuel this week? He was like price of the QB1 on both sites, right?
I think it was the QB2.
QB2 on DraftKings, but yeah, on FanDuel, I think he was.
He was leaps and bounds of QB1, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on the slate, right? Because this week, I couldn't justify paying up for him because Drew Brees was in a, you know, a matchup with just as good of a total and, you know, in a dome against a bad defense. Like, if you're going to pay up for Mahomes, I figured, you know, might as well just pay a little bit less and get Brees in your lineup. And we haven't even seen, I guess this isn't main slate worthy, but we haven't seen what's going on with Fitzpatrick and Roethlisberger on Monday night. So when there are other good, you know, values available at quarterback, like, I'm not going to be paying up in DFS, but I mean, you're right. Like, you can probably justify it a lot of the time. It's just the baseline strategy with quarterbacks in daily fantasy is that you probably shouldn't be paying for them in the first place, just because there's always going to be guys from the lower dollar amounts that hit value and exceed value.
Adrian Peterson rushed 19 times for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Redskins' Week 3 win over the Packers.
Shit, no. Green Bay stinks against the run. They ranked 26th in run defense DVOA entering the week, and their defensive line ranks dead last, or ranked dead last in adjusted line yards. Is probably going to get even worse when Football Outsiders updates those numbers after this slate. Although I suppose I should say no shit on the usage for Peterson, because it makes sense that Washington wanted to control the clock, wanted to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field, and wanted to exploit the matchup. I just shit know this in terms of, is this going to be repeatable for Peterson week after week? I don't think so.
Cam Newton completed 15 of 24 passes for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns and rushed 10 times for 36 yards and 2 additional scores in the Panthers' 31-21 win over the Bengals in Week 3.
No shit. This is like the most Cam Newton line ever. I mean, doesn't he do this all the time?
Saquon Barkley rushed 17 times for 82 yards and a touchdown and caught 5 passes for 35 yards in Week 3 against the Texans.
No shit. He's really damn good. We talked about him earlier. I mean, are you guys surprised at this sort of production? I think we can kind of come to expect this going forward. And all the people who were talking about Saquon as, it's too risky for a first-round pick in redraft and whatnot. Like, they're all going to get proven wrong just because the usage is there and because he's so talented.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just hoping for more targets. But, yeah, like we said before, it was kind of a weird game with only 29 pass attempts. So hopefully they'll be coming. Definitely like to see him get the sort of girly 2016 DJ and Le'Veon Bell sort of usage.
I mean, he was already second in targets coming into the week, right? Or I guess he's still second in targets. He has 27 on the year. That's behind only Kamara, as I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Thompson only had two, and McCaffrey only had two, so they were up there, but neither of them got any, so.
But, I mean, how many more targets do you think he can get week to week?
Yeah, that's a good question. The 16 or whatever he had last week is not a realistic number, of course. if Manning is attempting more like 35 passes, then 7 or 8 would be nice to see.
That's a very robust number. I mean, that's, that kind of usage puts him very much so. If we were to redraft now, where would you guys be taking Barkley if we were to redraft a new league right now?
I mean, third or fourth pick, maybe? You take Kamara, you...
You can't really take DJ, so...
Right.
But you take Gurley, you take Kamara.
Barkley ahead of Zeke.
Yeah, yep, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Like Melvin Gordon comes up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kareem Hunt still has a case, even though he hasn't been that great until this week. Although the way that they're using Spencer Ware is a problem for Hunt's value. I think I would take Barkley over him still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, third pick.
Yeah. Third pick. Third or fourth sounds right. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially considering he was like a consensus 107, 108. Mm-hmm. That's to still appreciate at that pricing is ridiculous.
I mean, the real answer is probably that we should have been taking wide receivers. Like, this has been a huge zero RB year for sure.
Exactly. Like Michael Thomas might be up there.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is, like, one of those dudes that you might have taken with that in mind, like, if you took Odell Beckham as your zero RB target in the first round, like, that, you're probably kicking yourself for not drafting Michael Thomas. Or, even DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he had 10 targets today, and we'll get to him. But I don't know. Like, does Michael Thomas deserve consideration over those guys at this point? I mean, it seems like he does.
Without a doubt. I mean, the fact that Michael Thomas was a consensus, like, mid-second rounder is, just think back on it, like, wow, what a way to change in, like, what, a month? A month? That's all it took for us to quickly realize, whoops, this is a mistake.
I mean, the thing is, we've never seen, this is getting off topic a little, but we've never seen Breeze really target a guy. One guy like this before, so this is kind of new territory for, a Breeze wide receiver. But definitely can't deny he's getting the volume.
Are you guys worried about Cam Meredith coming back? I mean, he caught a touchdown today. We have to assume he's going to keep playing and keep seeing a little bit more usage. Do you worry about him chipping away at that Michael Thomas work share?
It can only go down from here. I mean, he's at, what, 35%, 38%, something? Just,
exactly.
Just outside, just ridiculous. Really, I think Ingram coming back plus a little them working Cam Meredith in, maybe a little bit more Traquan, might actually start taking the wind out of Michael Thomas's sails a little bit. But, you know, it's very difficult to project how this New Orleans Saints' defense will look going forward. And if they continue to just kind of be the shell of what they were in 2017 and resemble the defenses of 2015 and 2016, there'll be enough volume for Drew Brees to actually sustain this kind of production and Michael Thomas to sustain this kind of pace, even though he'll see that reduced share. This is kind of something that I wrote about in the 32 for 32 series over on 2QBs regarding Drew Brees, namely that last year he was ultra efficient. The volume just wasn't there for him. He was completing over 70% of his passes, and a significant chunk of his the touchdowns that New Orleans scored came via the ground, not through the air. That is starting to shift back to how it has been under this Brees-led offense, you know, where they had to just sort of open the offense up more and just chase these gaudy point totals that other teams were dropping on whatever they referred to as a defense. And it's actually really fun watching Drew Brees doing that, and it's really fun having had noted that for 2QBs.com.
Well, and I think you can look at what we've talked about, the fact that Meredith is getting involved, the fact that Mark Ingram is going to come back at some point, and you could start to talk yourself into them regressing back towards that run heavier script. And maybe that's a reason to get off of Michael Thomas, to actually sell him right now. But I don't know if I can pull the trigger on that type of, you know, transaction, because I don't, if whoever I'm getting back, there's probably just as much unknown with that player. And I don't really like to be in the business of selling away my best players, like, at all. Like, it's like fantasy is such a week to week sport anyway, that if I have a guy who's producing now and it seems like that's going to continue for the most part, like, I'm going to just kind of ride it out. That's just the type of player I am. But do you guys think maybe I'm underthinking this, and that once Ingram comes back, it's possible that that plus all these other factors might, you know, make Thomas's value go down going forward? We're completely off the rails at this point, but would you, I guess what I'm asking is, would you sell Michael Thomas right now based upon everything we've talked about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, in the past when I've tried to kind of sell high on guys, it often doesn't work out. Like, I'm not getting all the, you know, he keeps being good and I'm stuck with someone who was maybe underperforming and continues to underperform. So there's always that kind of risk when you're trying to sell high, I guess. I mean, the other thing about today, he had 10 targets and Kamara had 20. So I think it's more likely Kamara doesn't see 20 targets going forward. So there might even be some room for, you know, Thomas maybe won't regress as much as we're thinking, even with Meredith back, even if they work Traquan in. But, you know, if you take a little from Thomas, a little from Kamara, a little from Ginn, I think he could still get the volume and still be really good. So yeah, I don't think I'd be selling either.
I can't see why you want to sell Michael Thomas either. I agree with you. There's no reason to sell him. You said it's a very week-to-week sport. That's very true. Even with Ingram coming back, it doesn't necessarily mean that their defense is suddenly magically good again. If you go to the RotoViz Game Splits app, you'll see how game script sensitive Ingram's usage really is, especially now that Kamara's in the fold. And if they're, you know, coughing up 14-plus points and they find themselves in the hole all that often, all that means is Ingram's just going to find himself on the bench all the time. He's not the kind of, you know, talent that either Michael Thomas or Alvin Kamara are. So really, if this defense continues to underperform, all that means is if you took Mark Ingram in the fourth or the fifth round, there's a very real possibility he's just not going to be on the field very much.
Yeah, I've got him in SFB. I'm really worried about that. The defensive matchups that he's going to face when he comes back are kind of terrifying too. There's a lot of reason to fade Mark Ingram right now, although we'll see when he comes back, I guess.
Jordy Nelson caught 6 of 8 targets for 173 yards and a touchdown in the Raiders' Week 3 loss to the Dolphins.
Shit, no, this totally took me surprise. It took me by surprise. Miami rated pretty well against wide receivers entering Week 3, but I guess that's probably more about the quarterbacks that they faced in Weeks 1 and 2. Because they got, you know, Mariota and Gabbert in Week 1, and then they got Sam Darnold. Still, I didn't think that Derek Carr this week was all that much better, and I expected him to kind of key in on Amari Cooper just like he did last week. And I don't know, this is an interesting situation because, like, Jared Cook was featured in Week 1, Amari was featured in Week 2, and now Jordy goes bananas in Week 3. I don't really know how to read this Raiders offense. Do you think this thing with the Raiders where one particular player gets an abnormal work share is by design from John Gruden. Do you think we need to account for this or try to predict this type of usage going forward? Because it seems like he might just be that crazy, you know what I mean? Where he's like, this week we're only going to throw to Jared Cook, and it's if it works, it works. You know, am I crazy for thinking about it this way? Because it's just been so strange through 3 weeks.
Yeah, that makes a weird amount of sense, but how would, you know, hard to get inside his mind, I guess. So I don't know if it's that helpful for fantasy to even think that that's going on.
I wonder if he's really just attacking teams where they're the weakest, right? Like, we know the Rams are weak against the tight end because of how strong their corners are. So
yeah, tight end Mike Williams proved that today.
Yeah, exactly. and then, you know, with I don't know how Amari went 10 for 10 against Denver in Denver, but this it looks like they sacrificed Amari to Xavier Howard. It's very impressive that Xavier Howard has taken this massive step forward. He completely locked down Amari Cooper, and I don't know the name of the cornerback that's across from him that just got completely roasted and just ruined by the corpse of Jordy Nelson, but here we are.
Yeah, if you look at the adjusted target numbers from the first 2 weeks from Football Outsiders, there were 11 adjusted targets per game to the wide receiver one, but only 5.1 to the wide receiver two and 4.5 to the wide receiver three. So those wide receiver two and three numbers are both below the league average in terms of adjusted targets, but the wide receiver one numbers are like well above it. And so does that mean that like, and it's funny because like they don't really explain to you how they track that and delineate between which players specifically the wide receiver one, which is the wide receiver two, but it probably has to do with where they line up more than anything. Like I think typically the way they track is the wide receiver three is the slot receiver, the wide receiver one is the X, and so I guess maybe that does make sense that Jordy Nelson performed well in this matchup, and maybe that's the type of receiver we need to look at going forward against Miami. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like you said, I don't totally understand how Football Outsiders does those delineations, so it's hard to really say much about that, but that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, and that's also something that, as you mentioned earlier, it's difficult to tell with Miami because they haven't faced two very good quarterbacks, and it's debatable whether Carr is actually good or not.
He's not.
I mean, we'll see how this trend continues when the Dolphins go to face, the New England Patriots in Foxborough.
Yeah, I mean, but see, that's so different too because they have Gronk, and the running backs catch so many passes in that offense. But it will be interesting to see how they defend like Gordon versus Chris Hogan. And will Edelman be back for that game, or does he have one more game to sit out?
That'll be his final game that he's sitting out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. I can't wait for that one. Man, that'll be interesting.
Randall Cobb got 4 of 11 targets for 23 yards in the Packers' Week 3 loss to the Washington Redskins.
No shit. Washington rated really well in DVOA against the pass. And I keep bringing this up because DVOA is like the primary driver of that game Flobotics thing that I do that you mentioned at the top of the show. But the Redskins were 7th overall and top 11 against all different receiver types. They ranked especially well against short throws, 3rd in the NFL, and against throws to the middle of the field, 2nd in the NFL. So the way to attack Washington through the air was with Geronimo Allison, and that's what they did. But to be honest, they probably should have put more emphasis on the run because that's where the Washington defense really struggles. I'm not surprised that Cobb had a rough game here because the Washington defense is set up to defend him well.
Giovanni Bernard rushed 12 times for 61 yards and a touchdown and caught 5 of 9 targets for 25 yards in the Bengals' Week 3 loss to Carolina.
Yeah, no shit. Bernard currently has the running back job all to himself, and even when A.J. Green is on the field, that Cincinnati receiving core isn't really deep enough to displace Bernard from a pass-heavy game script. Like, you might see some games where if the team has to throw a lot, the receivers are so good that they don't really throw to the back out of the backfield. But we know that Bernard's a good receiver. We know that, you know, the Bengals aren't super deep at wide receiver and tight end, so he's going to stay involved kind of regardless of game script. And as long as Mixon is out, that means Bernard is going to be valuable. I really like him going forward for the next, you know, it might just be 1 week. It might be 0 weeks. We don't know. Mixon could be back this week. Who knows?
I'm really hoping Giovanni Bernard keeps this role for one more week, because it'd be great to see him get all the work, especially the receiving work against the Atlanta Falcons, who just cough up receptions to the running back.
Yep.
Wendell Smallwood rushed 10 times for 56 yards and a touchdown while catching 3 of 5 targets for 35 yards in Sunday's Week 3 win over the Colts.
Shit, no, I didn't see this. I was on Corey Clement. This Eagles backfield might be kind of like the Jaguars. It could just be a mess going forward for fantasy owners to sort through. Smallwood isn't that good either, so I don't necessarily know if you want to be super excited about picking him up off the waiver wire or anything like that, because even though he got the usage, he got the touchdown this week, if Jay Ajayi comes back next week, like, does he just disappear altogether? Do you want to spend fab on that type of player? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, the Eagles actually do a pretty good job of rotating their backs. It seems like they're one of the teams that's fairly agnostic in terms of running back talent and evaluation. They will just play the guy as they need to and just rotate them in and out as needed. And as you mentioned, I just wonder what that means really for Jay, because they've said repeatedly he's our workhorse and we're going to go right back to him. But it just seems like that's just not going to happen.
Javorius Allen rushed 6 times for 7 yards and a touchdown and caught 3 passes for 19 yards and another score in the Ravens' Week 3 win over the Broncos.
No shit. Allen has been Baltimore's primary goal lineback since last season. This is nothing new.
Calvin Ridley corralled 7 of 8 targets for 146 yards and 3 touchdowns while gaining 9 yards on his lone carry on Sunday in the Falcons' Week 3 loss to the Saints.
This is a shit no for me. I didn't see this coming at all. I was more in on Tevin Coleman. I thought he was going to have a big game in this particular spot, but this is something we have to pay attention to. Like, maybe this should have been a no shit for me, but I don't know. It seems like this is something that could be a trend, right? As defenses key on Julio Jones, that's going to open up stuff for the other receivers. Before all they had was Mohamed Sanu, who is not that great, and Austin Hooper, who I'm pretty sure is just completely mediocre and replacement level at tight end. Like, he might be a little bit better than that. He's still pretty young. I shouldn't write him off this soon, but just based upon what he can do right now, like, it seems like Ridley is the player that they've needed for like 3 years. And like, ever since they lost Roddy White. So I think I'm buying into this going forward, but I was not expecting a big Calvin Ridley day. He destroyed me in a couple DFS head to heads today. I was not excited about that.
So I actually did get Calvin Ridley onto a few DFS lineups. The problem is I can't remember exactly what I was thinking when I put him in there, so it must have been pretty bad process. So I'm not even going to pretend like I am predicting this kind of game. I obviously thought something was going on there. But
no, I mean,
it was earlier in the week, and I can't remember now.
You probably did have good process. I mean, you look at the over-under on the game. You look at the fact that it has potential to shoot out because they're playing the Saints. And, again, there aren't that many options in Atlanta. And if you kind of just throw a few darts at one guy, throw a few darts at another guy, you're going to end up with maybe a little bit of Austin Hooper, a little bit of Calvin Ridley, a lot of Julio Jones, a lot of Saints players. But I think the fact that you got there at all is good process, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, maybe. Christian Kirk caught 7 of 8 targets for 90 yards in Sunday's Week 3 loss to the Bears.
Shit, no. I mean, I had no feel for the Cardinals offense whatsoever. I still don't really have any feel for it because it sounds like, or it looks like, they're going to be making a quarterback change to Josh Rosen going forward. I don't know. I mean, Christian Kirk got a lot of hype in the preseason and in rookie drafts, but based upon the way that the Cardinals had played through the first couple weeks, I wasn't really ready to project him as, you know, any sort of usable fantasy asset. And I wouldn't be surprised if next week he goes back to having like 4 targets and 2 catches. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Josh Rosen is going to be, like every other rookie, is he going to be able to sustain the kind of fantasy production that we need, especially from the wide receiver position with Larry Fitzgerald there. And now that they're trying to work in David Johnson a little bit more as an actual receiver, which correct me if I'm wrong, guys, he was actually pretty good at that in 2016, right?
The survey says yes.
So, yeah, so it'll be interesting to see whether or not Rosen's going to be talented enough to actually hold these guys up. You know, we saw Mayfield. We've seen a little bit of Darnold. We saw Josh Allen. It'll be interesting to see how these rookies are able to sustain or maintain whether or not the players that they're actually funneling the ball to are capable of having big fantasy days. And I just am not a believer. I'm sorry. I'm not a believer in Mike McCoy's offense or whatever he likes to call it. It's a very turgid. It's a slow offense. They played Bates up today. But that still didn't mean that there were a lot of points to be had. Maybe it's because Chicago's defense is good, but it'll be interesting to see what they do next week because this offense is, you know, it tried to not play football for the first two games, and even today they've just not been good.
That is a big takeaway, though. The Bears' defense is awesome. Like, they're probably a top-five defense or a top-five matchup you want to avoid going forward, right? Like, I don't really want to start quarterbacks against the Bears' defense, and, you know, by proxy, that means that I'm going to be lower on receivers going up against them, too. Are you guys on the same page with the Bears' defense?
Without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely. It's good they face Tampa Bay next week, so good week for Winston to come back.
Hey, if Fitzpatrick rolls through on Monday night, man, that's going to be the week that we know it's coming.
I drafted so much Jameis Winston in two quarterback formats, and I thought I was so smart doing it as like my QB3 because he was so cheap. And I, in those leagues now, I probably don't have a third quarterback. I'm going to be spending so much. I tweeted about this earlier. I'm going to be bidding so much fab on CJ Beathard this week. It's going to be so sad.
Alvin Kamara totaled 66 yards on 16 carries while corralling 15 of 20 targets for an additional 124 yards in the Saints' Week 3 win over the Falcons.
I mean, no shit, Alvin Kamara's good, but shit no on 20 targets. Like, 20 targets for a running back? Like, wide receivers don't even get that many targets. That's insane.
Mike Williams caught 4 of 7 targets for 81 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Chargers' Week 3 loss to the Rams.
No shit, I alluded to this earlier, but Jared Cook showed us this blueprint. I mean, Mike Williams is effectively the tight end on the Chargers. And I mean, say what you will about Virgil Green and Antonio Gates. Like, Antonio Gates probably shouldn't be, but he's tried to retire so many times. Like, I wish they would just let Mike Williams have all those targets. But yeah, I think you could have seen this coming based upon how you want to attack the Rams defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Mike Williams, just going back to his combine, and, you know, just a shout out to J.J. Zacharyson and Danny Carter for their dad runner thing, but Mike Williams' dad ran that 40. And he's, like, you know, by all intents and purposes, like you said, he really is, by and large, like a glorified tight end. I think we know kind of what to do, especially from a DFS and streaming tight end perspective going forward. We're getting a pretty good idea. And I think it'll help me avoid, at the very least, these tight end streaming pitfalls like I did today.
Yeah, I think the one word of caution I would throw out to people who might be considering that, you know, hey, I'm going to start streaming tight ends against the Rams defense all the time, is that you probably still want that tight end to be tethered to a competent quarterback. And so when Phillip Rivers is throwing to Mike Williams, like, that makes sense. And again, We're using the term tight end loosely when it comes to Mike Williams, because technically he's a wide receiver when you put him into your lineups. But if you're looking for that type of player, I don't necessarily know if I want to be using that type of player against the Rams unless, you know, there's a good quarterback who can get that person the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you definitely might want to double think this. If, for example, you don't want to be streaming Jake Butter, Jeff Huerman against the Rams in week four. Five against the week six against the Broncos, or George Kittle with CJ Beathard.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Will Fuller caught 5 of 12 targets for 101 yards and a touchdown in week 3 against the Giants. Fuller is now averaging more than 10 targets per game in 2018.
Yeah, no shit. Fuller pretty much has to be that type of target hog, because who else is Deshaun Watson going to throw to? Bruce Ellington has already reverted to his, you know, homeostasis, his standard state of being injured. I guess that Kiki QT, who you mentioned earlier, could come in and start to steal some targets, but I don't see why we should try to second guess the chemistry that Watson and Fuller have shown us. Hopkins is still one of the best receivers in football. He's going to continue to get a bunch of targets. But outside of him, like, Fuller's the guy. I think that Fuller's going to be fine.
Yeah, I think this Houston receiving game is going to be very concentrated between these two guys. Fuller's that big play threat. I know Blair's a very big Will Fuller fan. He actually was the guy who got me onto Fuller this offseason. So I'm very optimistic about him going forward.
Yeah, I definitely love this, of course. And, it, you know, with the targets being so concentrated, it really, if you own Hopkins and Fuller on the same team, it makes it easy to start them. I, in fact, stacked them both with Deshaun Watson in DFS today and, you know, cashed in min cash in tournaments, but nothing big.
Min cash is better than no cash.
That's right.
Want an unfair advantage to dominate your fantasy football league? Well, look no further and download SquadQL, the only mobile app you need to crush your friends and rivals this year. SquadQL recommends the best starting lineup for you based each week based on your starters, bench players, and free agent pool. You may ask, how does SquadQL actually do this? The app connects directly with your Yahoo, ESPN, and CBS leagues, pulling in your actual roster and your league scoring settings. SquadQL provides waiver and trade recommendations, plus the app gives you player rankings each week, and it's based on your league settings. SquadQL truly is your go-to app this fantasy football season. Head to SquadQL.com to download SquadQL, your all-in-one fantasy football manager. SquadQL is brought to you by the creators of RotoQL, the leading daily fantasy lineup optimizer trusted by 100,000 DFS players. You can also download RotoQL for free for both Apple and Android.
All right, move.
Hey, sports fans, football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event, even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
Moving on to news item number 3, Cardinals coach Steve Wilks wouldn't commit to Sam Bradford starting in week 4. Bradford was benched in the fourth quarter after 3 turnovers, but Josh Rosen struggled in relief, throwing an interception and a pick 6 that was called back. So, Greg, who do you think will be starting in week 4? Do you think that the eventual transition to Rosen could kind of help get this offense working again?
I mean, because they made the shift in game, you have to kind of expect that they're going to use Rosen going forward. We know he's the future of the franchise. Quarterbacks that are drafted as highly as he was in the NFL draft typically start a lot of games in year one. Like that was the argument for Baker Mayfield over Tyrod Taylor in seasonal leagues. You know, I think number one overall QB picks start an average of 13 and a half games or something like that. And top 10 quarterbacks, it's like 12.4 games in year one. So the writing was on the wall that Rosen was going to be the quarterback eventually. And so now that they've made the switch in the middle of a game, it makes sense, I think, just to start him the next week. So I expect Rosen to be in there. Can he get the offense back on track? I'm much more skeptical of that. That offensive line is such a mess. It's one of the worst in football. And that's something that I really come to value with quarterbacks, and especially with bad to mediocre quarterbacks. Like, Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson can succeed if their offensive lines aren't very good because they're really good players. For a young guy like Rosen, who's still, you know, learning how to play in the NFL, putting him behind a bad offensive line is a recipe for disaster. So if anything, I think it might hurt David Johnson's value even more. Now, it's hard to say because David Johnson was already underperforming pretty heavily. So that might be the reason for them to go back to Bradford or to stick with Bradford for one more week and see if he can turn it around. But I'm really afraid of owning any piece of this offense. And I don't think that Josh Rosen is the answer. I think a better offensive line is the answer, and they're not going to get that in the middle of the year. That's just not happening.
Yeah, this is actually one of the teams that I've been following on a weekly basis in the NFC version of the Zero RB report. And in the first two additions, I wrote about and I commented on how this team just played with a lack of pace. In week one, they barely ran any plays over the first three quarters, and they actually almost doubled their pace in the fourth quarter alone. And in week two, they just didn't play at all. It looked like they just don't care about the sport of football. And like Greg mentioned, this offensive line is it's a complete disaster. I'm genuinely going to be very worried about David Johnson. They're still not throwing to him as much as you need. Hopefully, we get more checkdowns to him. I don't know. I just, like I mentioned earlier, I do not trust this Mike McCoy offense. They've had 9 months to implement something that actually maximizes David Johnson's ability as a receiver. They couldn't figure it out in 1 week. I don't think they can figure it out in another week. This is going to take an entire offseason. If you hold David Johnson in Dynasty, do not sell. But there's just no light at the end of this tunnel.
Are you trying to sell in redraft if you own him? And, you know, what would you be willing to give him up for?
I don't think I own him anywhere in redraft, but at this point...
Lucky.
Yeah.
Very lucky.
Yeah, tell me about it. I was fortunate to not get any of those top picks. You'd honestly probably want to be moving him for someone like a Will Fuller. I just can't think of anyone who would... like. Who do you think realistically you could actually get for David Johnson? I mean, if you own him, you're probably, unless you're somehow supremely stacked in traditional redraft, you're probably looking at a what? Probably 0-2 here, maybe 0-3. And if everything broke poorly for you, in which case you're kind of in that panic mode where you got to start looking for trading away your ones for twos that are just these longer upside shots in an attempt to like salvage whatever you have with the fantasy season. But if you're looking at a team that somehow struggled to 2-1 with David Johnson and people see that, who do you think you could realistically get back in exchange for DJ? Would it be something like a Julian Edelman plus another Tyler Boyd?
That was immediately where my mind went, was to go after somebody who's still suspended, like go after Ingram or Edelman or even Le'Veon Bell, who isn't suspended but might come back eventually, plus another piece, like a lesser wide receiver or something like that. But I think you kind of just have to hold him and hope that the volume eventually gets there, especially if you are in a PPR format. Like if Rosen gets under center, even with Bradford under center, like if Johnson can just start to rack up those targets a little bit more consistently, then he should start to return at least like baseline value, borderline value, where he's getting you, you know, 10 to 15 points just based on volume alone. I don't know what you could get for him because I don't know who wants to buy him right now. It's not really a seller's market for David Johnson, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. You just go down with the ship. I mean, this is how it goes. And sometimes how it goes, right? Like people keep comparing this to Todd Gurley's down 2016, and that's probably what we're headed towards.
Yeah, but I think unlike Gurley, there's – well, no, that actually is a pretty good comparison. Never mind. You're right.
Yeah, you mentioned maybe trying to get Will Fuller for him, and I'm thinking, like, if I own Will Fuller and someone offers me David Johnson for Will Fuller, am I accepting that? And that's, like, a tough call. I don't think I am.
Bit of a tough seller's market, you called it.
What about one of like the Detroit receivers? Because with Will Fuller, we talked about how his usage is so predictable that he's probably just going to hold that value. But if you're trying to, like, would you trade him for Marvin Jones or Golden Tate or Kenny Golladay? Because I think it's going to be harder to predict those guys week to week, and maybe you can leverage that to some extent. Like, is that a deal that you think could get done?
Golladay is kind of ascending. I think people are going to overvalue him. Golden Tate, you might be able to do a one-for-one swap. Maybe something Marvin Jones plus a Mark Ingram sounds like it could be a pretty good deal if someone has that kind of roster configuration. What do you think on that one?
Yeah, I like it. Mm-hmm. I think targeting, yes. One of those other, like some other running back, like if you're trying to get a running back in the deal, like if you're basically trying to swap David Johnson for two lesser pieces, going after someone like Ingram who has some warts, like I'm trying to think of like name, especially if you're in PPR, maybe you go after a running back who doesn't have that sort of PPR upside, like Marshawn Lynch or I'm trying to think of other good examples, but nothing's really coming to mind. But that type of player where you're only going to get like that kind of rushing production and maybe some touchdown upside. And hopefully your trade partner will talk themselves into David Johnson as, you know, his target share going up, him seeing more receptions and starting to produce that way. But again, like the more we try to like figure out ways to get rid of David Johnson, the more I kind of realize it's like, well, I might as well just hold him at that point, because if I'm convincing somebody else that this stuff is going to happen, like, shouldn't I just be able to convince myself? Like if the deal is right, does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just can't see anything that makes sense. I was going to ask you about rookie RBs, but like, you know, this class is through 3 weeks outside of Barkley. We're sitting on not a very particularly robust class. I mean, Chris Carson completely crushed Dallas's soul. And Benny did absolutely nothing. So, you know, there's just no way I could convince someone else to say, well, go trade Chris, you know, David Johnson, go get one of those rookie RBs and try for a mid-range wide receiver. It's just not gonna happen. It just sounds like a terrible return.
Yep.
Mario KK Butt of the Cleveland Plain Dealer reports Baker Mayfield will be named the Browns' starting quarterback on Monday. Greg, how do you expect Baker Mayfield's rookie season will play out going forward? Who will be the major beneficiaries on this offense, and do you think he can actually finish as a QB1 this season?
So on like a points per game basis, I think he could probably get there. He's really good. Like, he probably should have been starting from week one. I drafted him a little bit as like a QB3 in some deep super flex leagues, and I'm pretty excited to own him there. But I think losing Josh Gordon takes a little bit of the shine off this, but they still have Jarvis Landry. Antonio Callaway looks pretty good, although he's been a little Jekyll and Hyde so far. I'm pretty excited for the Baker Mayfield experience. I'm optimistic that he's going to perform well going forward. Certainly better than some of the other, you know, bad quarterbacks we've talked about here. Like, I'd definitely rather have him than either of the Arizona guys. Like, I don't think that's even close. I might even rather have him than Derek Carr. Darnold, I would still rather have Mayfield over Darnold. Like, I'd have to look at like rest of the season rankings, but I'm optimistic for Mayfield going forward. I think it's only going to be good for the offense. I think probably the biggest beneficiary we're going to see is David Njoku. He's been getting the targets, except they've been Tyrod Taylor targets. And when you improve the quality of the quarterback play, I think that that's going to mean, you know, more catchable passes, more, you know, deep passes from Mayfield going to Njoku. And I saw him get dropped in a few leagues. I think people aren't really starting him anymore because he's been bad. I mean, or at least he hasn't produced well. And I think that's probably the biggest buying opportunity going forward here is Njoku with the addition of Mayfield to that quarterback or as a QB1.
Yeah, I like that call on Njoku. That's one of the first names that came to mind, too, of one of the major beneficiaries here. The other guy I'm thinking might be Duke Johnson, because we saw just a ton of times Taylor either, you know, taking off to run rather than checking down, or just taking a sack rather than checking down to Johnson. It's been kind of frustrating to be a Duke Johnson owner and not.
I didn't realize he still played.
Oh, yeah. Well, he might not be on the field that much. That's true.
That was just the Duke Johnson dig, because they haven't been using him. It's been really weird because I don't know if it's just because Nick Chubb is there now, but can you explain why Duke Johnson hasn't been used like that? Because it wasn't like Tyrod was afraid to throw the ball to LeSean McCoy necessarily. It seemed like Duke Johnson would have lined up really well with what he did, and he should line up well with what Mayfield does, like you said. But at the same time, just the lack of usage through two games or three games, I should say, is a little bit concerning. I'm a little worried about Johnson, even with the quarterback change.
It's a good point on McCoy that, you know, we've seen Taylor kind of use his pass catching running back before. So, I don't mean, you know, I don't know how creative Buffalo really was last year, but it could be a coaching thing, I guess. Although, I mean, you know, Johnson's usage from last year was awesome. And that was kind of what I was hoping for more of this year. So definitely a disappointment to see what he's done through three games. And I'm hopeful Mayfield can turn that around.
Now, I wrote in the week 16 by the report that you got to get out from under Duke Johnson. He had his best season. He had his best season. He just completely wrecked it. He was kind of TD dependent, a little bit more so than just cash dependent. He was didn't really have. I mean, Isaiah Crowell kind of lost the trust of that coaching staff. So you've got Duke who's able to come in. They didn't have a target hog, actually good wide receiver who succeeds at all depths like Jarvis Landry. You know, there was a lot going for Duke Johnson in last year's Browns' offense. It just isn't there in this year's Browns' offense. You couple that with the fact that the Browns' new OC actually historically typically rides his running backs. He just works them in all phases of the game. It just is one of those moments where you're looking at Duke Johnson kind of as a third wheel. And even when you're looking at that extension that he signed, when you get into the nitty gritty of his contract, it's a terrible contract, even for as far as extensions go. And, you know, I know don't pay running backs or whatever, even by that standard, it's bad. So, you know, you're looking at a guy who's more of a very nice to have as opposed to need to have. And maybe if Mayfield's, not really looking to check down and he finds a Jarvis Landry is a safer option, but you're able to get a handful of more yards as opposed to checking down all the way to Duke Johnson, who just looks like he's running through mud, if you ask me. I mean, when you watch him on tape, which isn't a particularly Rotovision thing to say, but, you know, here we are. That's just kind of what you're getting. And with, you know, Duke Johnson, Jarvis Landry and David Njoku able to create yak and be attractive targets in the middle of the field, that'd be interesting. One thing that I wanted to point out, we were, you know, gushing over Mahomes. Well, you know, Baker Mayfield and Mahomes shared the field for a hot second before Baker left for OU. We're going to get that in a handful of weeks here going forward. Sunday, November 4th, you're going to get Kansas City at Cleveland. Are you guys going to be, are you guys pretty excited about that?
Oh, yeah, totally. Cleveland's defense has actually kind of looked decent this year, so, you know, maybe not as high scoring a game as we've come to expect from Mahomes, but yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, I mean, I look forward to every game that Patrick Mahomes plays, and mm-hmm. I'm in on Baker too, so yeah, that'll be fun. I will be tuning into that one for sure.
All right, well, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Special thanks to our guest, Greg Smith. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Greg Sauce. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
From self-help books to meditation, we work hard to find peace of mind. Xfinity Home helps you rest easy with a total home security solution installed by experts and powered by secure and reliable Xfinity Wi-Fi. You'll get 24/7 professional monitoring with fast response times and real-time alerts, like when doors and windows are opened. Rest easier with Xfinity Home. Learn more at Xfinity.com/home security. Restrictions apply. Residential customers only. Requires compatible high-speed internet. Professional installation required.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.